These are African rhythms, passed down to us through ancient spirits. Feel the spirit, a unifying force. Come on, move with the spirit. Stand up, clap your hands. Move with the rhythm.
From WSNC 90.5 FM, a broadcasting service and NPR affiliate of Winston-Salem State University, welcome to Africa World Now Project. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. Today, Africans rising in solidarity with Black Lives Matter in the frame of Pan-African thought and practice. Africa World Now Project is next. W.E.B. Du Bois, in Pan-Africa and a New Racial Philosophy, presents his early articulations of Pan-Africanism as the industrial and spiritual emancipation of the Negro people, wherever they are in the world. As his thought on the subject evolves, Du Bois begins to regard the Pan-African movement as an aid to the promotion of national self-determination among Africans under African leadership for the benefit of Africans themselves. George Padmore, in Pan-Africanism or Communism, asserts that the idea of Pan-Africanism first arose as a manifestation of fraternal solidarity among Africans and people of African descent. Ali Sanwuche, ECDB, in Pan-Africanism, the Idea and Movement, 1776 to 1991, suggests that Pan-Africanism is a political and cultural phenomenon which regards Africa and their descendants abroad as a unit. Robert Christman, founding editor and publisher of Black Scholar, in Aspects of Pan-Africanism, also asserts that the Pan-African vision has as its basic premise that we, the people of African descent throughout the globe, constitute a common cultural and political community by virtue of our origin in Africa and our common racial, social, and economic oppression. It further maintains that political, economic, and cultural unity is essential among all Africans to bring about effective action for the liberation and progress of the African peoples and nations. Within the ideological trajectory articulated by Kwame Nkrumah, Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture, defines Pan-Africanism as the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. Whereas John Henrik Clark, in Pan-Africanism, A Brief History of an Idea in the African World, asserts that Pan-Africanism is about the restoration of African people to their proper place in world history, to facilitate and bring about the ingathering of African people throughout the world, and to restore what slavery and colonialism took away. Rupert Emerson, in Pan-Africanism, notes that Pan-Africanism is the sense that all Africans have a spiritual affinity with each other, and that, having suffered together in the past, they must march together into a new and brighter future. In its fullest realization, this would involve the creation of an African Leviathan in the form of a political organization or association of states. It might involve an almost infinite variety of regional groupings and collaborative arrangements, all partial embodiments of the counter-embracing unity, which is the dream of the true Pan-Africanist, as articulated by Nnamdi Ezikwe. Kwame Nantambu, in Pan-Africanism versus Pan-African Nationalism and Afrocentric Analysis, argues that the Pan-African struggle should not limit itself to any geographically dispersed or dislocated African peoples or their descendants. To do so is to play in the hands of the colonizer, thus enhancing the colonizer's continued control and exploitation. Nantambu goes on to argue that our specific geographic dispersal came about by design, not by accident of slavery. Our African ancestors had no input into selecting the final destination where they would labor as slaves for more than 3 centuries. Ergo, where they resisted European slavery is not more important than the fact that they did indeed resist and revolt against slavery wherever they were. I have explored in Pan-Africanism in the United States, Identity and Belonging, why Pan-African discourse is not a dominant expression in African diasporic resistance in the United States today. This is not to say Pan-African discourse is not present at all, But when situated in the historical and intellectual genealogy of African descent experiences in the United States, it is marginal at best. This becomes clear particularly when we examine dominant discourses around African descended resistance as it relates to constructing identities in order to belong to the social order as currently defined, that is, the United States as a settler colony. In this exploration, as well as in others, my primary objective is to examine how critical consciousness formation challenges or impedes the development of an Africana collective consciousness. And what does this mean to the theory and practice of human rights as a platform for realizing or securing justice, peace, and equity? Even with this contextualization, the marginalization of Africana women in the formation and evolution of Pan-African thought and practice is important to center. It is here we lean on the work of Carol Boyce Davies, who, along with other scholars, here I'm purposefully not gendering knowledge production, such as Minka Makalani, Eula Taylor, Barbara Ransby, Patricia McFadden, Neil Painter, Eric McDuffie, Ashley Farmer, Keisha Bland, and Marika Sherwood, to name a few, all argue in some form or another that connections between nationalist, feminist, and earlier communist positions have been interwoven in the theory and practice of Pan-Africanism. Davies goes on to assert the tendency has been, however, in succeeding years to disarticulate feminist frameworks of analysis as unrelated to Pan-Africanist positions and thereby minimize the work of Pan-Africanists who were women. This disarticulation has distorted the historical narrative of radical and Pan-African thought of the fact that in the early coverage of the 1900 Pan-African Congress, the delegates, all eminent in their sphere, who represented the United States, Canada, Ethiopia, Haiti, Liberia, Sierra Leone, the then Gold Coast, most of the islands of the then British West Indies, included Miss Anna Jones from Kansas and Miss Annie Cooper, i.e. Anna Julia Cooper from Washington, D.C., among others. Important to note here, Anna Julia Cooper was by then the author of A Voice from the South, one of the first books to put together theoretically race and gender, and perhaps one of the reasons she was invited to the 1900 conference, held 6 years later. She was also an activist for Black and women's rights, but had disappeared from definitions of Pan-Africanism. It is clear from the orientation of Cooper's work towards race and gender that she could not also follow a masculine Pan-Africanism as a singular discourse. Furthermore, at one of the subsequent Du Bois-organized Pan-African Congresses, Jesse Redman Fawcett, serving as a National Association for the Advancement of Colored Peoples delegate, provided a reflection titled Impressions of the Second Pan-African Congress. Not to mention that the Pan-African Congress, held in New York in 1927, is identified as being co-sponsored by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom. Mabel Dove Dankwa attended the Second Pan-African Congress. Her husband, Joseph Boyeke Dankwa, himself a major Pan-Africanist, is one of the African students that Amy Ashwood Garvey nurtured in the West African Students Union in London. Adelaide Casely Hayford, who married the Pan-Africanist J.E. Casely Hayford in 1903 and as a Pan-Africanist herself, briefly held the position of Lady President of the UNIA branch in Freetown, Sierra Leone. She also spent 2 years in the U.S. studying girls' schools, became associate of women like Nanny Helen Burroughs, and would later develop her own school for girls. In 1927, she attended the 4th Pan-African Congress in New York, which had been organized, of course, by W.E.B. Du Bois. In order to not belabor the point, Pan-African praxis, whether couched in an internationalism, as many academics situate the internationalist perspective ancestrally and historically rooted in Africana peoples movements, is deep. And because of this rebellious moment that we are currently living in, it is alive and evolving very rapidly. It is with this contextualization we bring a recent discussion that disrupts the fracture in Pan-African discourse, as we will hear the evolution of the movement in real time. Africana peoples are connected, and Africans rising for justice, peace, and dignity, in community with resistance movements across the world, are seeking to contribute to the long legacy of movements informed by Pan-Africanism as produced from the humanity of Africana peoples. Today, we explore the current rebellion through a Pan-African lens with Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity. Africans Rising is a Pan-African movement of people and organizations. Their mission is determined to foster an Africa-wide solidarity and unity of purpose of the peoples of Africa to build the future we want. A right to peace, social inclusion, and shared prosperity. This mission is centered on engaging with the entire African world. Next, you will hear, in order of speaking, Kumba Touré, co-coordinator of Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity. Hakima Abbas, executive co-director of the Association for Women's Rights and Development. M. Adams, community organizer and co-executive director of Freedom Inc. Taleb Saber, Pan-Africanist, filmmaker, and principal attorney at the Saber Law Firm. Dima Mahmoud, co-founder of the Nubian Initiative, a humanist, activist, and passionate changemaker. Gajeke Gachihi, coordinator with Mahari Social Justice Center and a member of Social Justice Center's working group in Nairobi, Kenya. And Noel Hailey, criminal justice program manager with the ACLU, California. Our show was produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descended communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Corporation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, and Ghana, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Enjoy the program.
Hello, everyone. Hello, hello. I hope you're hearing me well. Thank you for being here. My name is Kumba Touré, and I'm one of the coordinators of Africans Rising for Peace, Justice, and Dignity, a Pan-African movement, a young one, not more than 3 years, that is really working to build solidarity among Africans across the continent and in the diaspora, trying to be present and give support, amplify voices of Africans who are fighting for justice, for peace, and for dignity. Today, we have this specific gathering, because that's what I can call it. If of course, it's on the internet, but we will imagine that we are sitting in circle here, at least those of us who are on the panel. And if we could, we would be holding hands before we do anything. This particular one is part of a series that we are doing every Friday, having conversation with our membership. But very specifically, it is done in solidarity with movements, all the movements for Black lives, particularly the one right now in the US, is really what we are centering this solidarity. And the reason why we're also having this conversation is that we have many people who are members of Africans Rising, who are right now on the continent organizing, showing support. We are receiving every day statements from different places, different types of groups who are, showing their solidarity, and people are organizing, including organizing protests and so on. And on the 13th of this month, they're already about in 13 different countries, actually, 17 different countries, people who are planning some actions. And we thought, okay, as we go towards that, let us also connect and have a conversation with people who are today in the US and who are living through this situation directly. So this is why we are here. It is about building solidarity. It is about responding to questions like, what's really going on? These are the questions that we will be asking you. What's really going on? We want to hear it from you directly, not from the journalists, from the TV, from anybody. Second thing, we want to hear also from you how best can we be of support? How? What does solidarity look like for you? What should we pay attention to? Where should we go to get information? Who should we talk to? What are the things that maybe a lot of people are not understanding or paying attention to. We are here to also, I want to say, bridge, you know, a deep divide among Africans, whether it's the one, you know, on the continent or in the diaspora. One of the characteristics of our situation is the separation and the lack of knowledge of our current situation and sometimes of our own history for ourselves, wherever we are, but also about ourselves. So all of this is why we are here. So the first question, and not everybody has to respond to it, but is just to be able to say, you know, for what is going on from your perspective, because I just want you to tell us, to tell all of the members. Africans Rising have about 20,000 members individually and about 400 institutional members at this point. And we're trying to engage as many people as we can in supporting movements for Black lives in the U.S. And they need to hear from you what is going on. But before you do that, I'm going to ask Hakima to give us just a few points. I ask her because, you know, as we build solidarity, as we've written the statement to support the movements for Black Lives, as we started sharing on our social media, and as people started even, you know, organizing marches and sitting in some countries on the continent. They received, you know, criticism, sometimes mockery, people saying, okay, you know, there's so much violence anyway. We know about, extrajudicial killing. Gacheke can tell you a lot about all of the work he's doing in Nairobi where, you know, police people will, you know, kill young people, young poor people that way. And people start saying, oh yeah, and your governments are doing the same, and your police who are Black are doing the same. And why didn't you speak about this and about that? And we had to remind everyone, first of all, that solidarity is not about waiting. You get it, wait until you get it all together before you are in solidarity with someone else. Because if that's how you think, you will never. You know, because we will never get it all together. We never have generosity. Is not about having so much or enough that now you can give a little bit. No, it's about being able to be, you know, in solidarity in the midst of everything. That's number one. But number two, yes, we know everywhere in the world, you know, if you are Black, you will be made to feel it in one way or another. But today, We say we want to focus on what's happening in the U.S. because today, U.S. have decided and are moving out and standing. This is in the midst of COVID-19. This is in struggle. This is so many things going on, but people just have had enough and are rising. And that is the moment where, you know, they need the most support, and that is when we needed to stand. But lastly, people need to remember and know the history. Dima, when you spoke earlier, it just, you know, touched me so much. And people on the African continent need to know the history of the support that we've got from Black, you know, Americans, whether it was for African liberations during the independence, the anti-apartheid movement, you know, so many more times that people who did not get it all together where they were in the US, who were not treated yet as equal, still, you know, extended the hand and worked and built solidarity with Africans on the continent. It's been going on for a while. So Hakima, just a few points to camp these before we give the floor to the different panelists to tell us more about the situation. Thank you. Hakim.
Thank you, Kumba. And I look forward to hearing from all of our family in the US about what is happening and to hear more about that. You asked me to contextualize this, Kumba, a little bit. So when we talk about the situation in the US, I think it's important to start by acknowledging the nature of the US state. The US is a settler colonial state. It's based on two atrocities, the genocide of indigenous peoples and the genocide and enslavement of African peoples. It's a state that's created on stolen land and built from the labor of stolen people. Why is that important in this moment? Because if you understand this history, you understand that the murders of Breonna Taylor, of George Floyd, of Tony McDade are part of a systemic virus of white supremacy, imperialism, and colonialism. And when you understand that, you understand that the struggle is not just about the arrest of one cop or sending these cops to prison, which is of course important right now, but that justice and reparation and reconciliation will have to be a much deeper process of reckoning with Indigenous and African communities in the US. And you ask Kumba, kind of what is the relevance or why is it important to us on the continent of Africa? And it's simply because the systems of oppression that we're fighting locally are global, and that we have a global African village. Even as we recognize the contextual differences, it's in some ways difficult to talk about solidarity or support. It feels deeper than that. In many ways, this is all of our struggle. And as you said, there's a long history of us working together in Pan-Africanist struggle across the diaspora and the continent, from the Pan-African Congresses to, as you said, the fight against apartheid, where there was significant African, including African-American involvement. We think of people like Malcolm X, Kwame Ture, Kathleen Cleaver, Shirley Du Bois, the Black Panther Movement, the Black Liberation Army, all recognized the importance of Pan-African solidarity and took action and coordinated across our movements. And in many ways, this moment isn't different. It's significant and it's joyful for all of us to see the movement for Black life and dignity take hold, grow, and capture the imagination in the US. And there's been an outpouring of solidarity from Black people all over the continent and the diaspora, but also from non-Black people who have been fighting against imperialism the world over, including in Palestine, where the historic solidarity between African and Palestinian peoples continues. I think we as African people all over the world are righteously outraged because we understand that there's the linked fates and common oppression, but also because the manifestations of violence are so similar. In South Africa, for example, at least 12 people have been murdered by the police and the army in the first weeks of this COVID lockdown. Our comrades at Abahlali, the Shack Dwellers Movement, report that the police kill more than three times the number of people that are killed by the police in the US per capita. As you mentioned, Gasheke and other comrades and family in Kenya also know that the extrajudicial killing is part and parcel of the violence meted against our people there. In Brazil, approximately 118 Black people are murdered every day in what Afro-Brazilians are calling a silent genocide. 118 Black people are murdered every day. The police everywhere institutionalized to maintain the oppression of the working class and the proletariat in the interest of the capitalist class. And in terms of the similarities, it's even come down to the weapons that are used, the companies that build these weapons, who they're being trained by, and it's feeding the military industrial complex that is used for external wars, but also internally to control rebellions against unjust systems. And I talked about the capitalist class. I think it's a miss to talk only about police violence. We also have to talk about capitalism and imperialism. And in Africa, we experience the imperialist and colonial relationship between the US, the West, and increasingly other parts of the world, which is maintained with the complicity of our own ruling elites and through the threat and use of militarized responses. In Africa, we see that there's a network of about 29 US military bases in Africa. Why do those exist? This imperialist relationship to the US is in, experienced this deeply also violent economic oppression of our people. To ensure capitalist exploitation of Africa, we've seen the murder of many of our liberation leaders and movements. And this capitalist exploitation is literally killing our people. In this moment with the COVID pandemic and other things, they're predicting a massive economic recession and predicting massive deaths of our people. So those are also things that we have to take action around and be in global solidarity around. But we're here, as I said, to call out the murders of Breonna Taylor, of George Floyd, of Tony McDade, and we must do it at the same time as condemning and being in solidarity with the struggles in Burkina Faso, in Guinea, in Colombia, in Sudan, in DRC. As Africans, it's our duty to see and listen and be inspired, take action with one another across our struggles, because if any of us are attacked, all of us are attacked. I want to particularly uplift the names of Breonna Taylor and Tony McDade. Breonna is a Black cisgender woman, and Tony, a Black transgender man who were killed by the police in the US. And as Em said, the impact of state violence in the US on Black bodies manifests in multiple ways. I read somewhere that something like 64,000 Black women are missing in the US. Missing. We need to talk about that. On the continent of Africa, we witness kind of the attempt to disappear Black women and queer lives from the very narrative of African identity. We can't fall into that trap of creating hierarchies of African lives, of becoming essentially agents of imperialism by holding on for dear life to patriarchy, homophobia, transphobia, and male supremacy. As Dima said, in Sudan, hundreds of protesters were murdered, and at least 70 women and men were raped in a deliberate campaign to break the girls. Because even if we in our movements don't, power does recognize the power of women. And so we have to make noise for our women, for our girls, and our trans people. I'll end by saying that the uprisings across the US are part of a long tradition of Black liberation movement. We have elders in the US, 70, 80-year-old people who are still being punished for their involvement in the Black liberation movement as young people. People like Sundiata Okoli, Mutulu Shakur, Jaleel Mutakin, Rochelle McGee, who are in prison in the US and have been there for over 40 years, and political exiles like African freedom fighter Sata Shakur. At the time, many of our exiles came to the continent and other places like Cuba. So I think as we are in solidarity in this moment, we have to also keep a watchful eye and protect the people who are involved in this struggle, like the people on this call, like the children and the adults who are being arrested now, who were arrested and are still in prison in Ferguson, because the punishment and the violence can also be swift. I'm really glad that we're mobilizing for an African Day of Action in defense of our people in the US, because when there's no justice, there's really just us. And we have a duty not only to indict the system, to shut it down, but also to build new ways of being, of doing, of sustaining. We have to become, as Asata said, weapons of mass construction. Indeed, we have nothing to lose but our chains. Thank you.
Thank you so, so much, Hakima, for this. Thank you. I'm just gonna quickly, because of the interest of time, just ask M. Adam, tell us what's going on right now for you, for the movements that you are involved in. Just give people who are on this call, on this Zoom, but also people who are following us live, who are wondering what is going on. What would you say is going on?
Right now, we are engaged in rebellion across all of the 50 states of the United States. There are cities, mostly cities, I think that some of them are maybe smaller towns, but urban rebellion happening across all 50 states. And when I say urban rebellion, I am talking about mass mobilizations where people are using their bodies to directly confront power. And oftentimes that means that people...
We are listening to Africans Rising in solidarity with Black Lives Matter in the frame of Pan-African thought and practice. Who you were hearing and who you will be hearing as we move forward in order of speaking are a range of activists and thinkers that include Kumba Touré, co-coordinator of Africans Rising for Justice, Peace, and Dignity, Hakima Abbas, executive co-director of the Association for Women's Rights and Development, M. Adams, community organizer and co-executive director of Freedom Inc., Talib Saber, Pan-Africanist, filmmaker, and principal attorney at the Saber Firm, Dima Mahmoud, co-founder of the Nubian Initiative and humanist, activist, and passionate changemaker, Gajetke Gachihi, coordinator with the Meheri Social Justice Center and a member of the Social Justice Center's working group in Nairobi, Kenya, and Yuel Haile, criminal justice program manager with the ACLU of Northern California. Our show is produced today in solidarity with the Native, Indigenous, African, and Afro-descendant communities at Standing Rock, Venezuela, Cooperation Jackson in Jackson, Mississippi, Brazil, the Avalon Village in Detroit, Colombia, Kenya, Palestine, South Africa, and Ghana, and other places who are fighting for the protection of our land for the benefit of all peoples. Continue to enjoy the program.
Where people are using their bodies to directly confront power. And oftentimes that means that people begin to attack the state economically by going after, by directly confronting police, where people are nightly and facing police violence against them. And many police forces across the country have also called on help from the domestic U.S. military, so the National Guard. Has been deployed, as well as the president is currently threatening other military forces be deployed inside of cities in the United States. So nightly, people are engaged with being on the streets, demanding and resisting that police terrorism. Also, and as part of that rebellion, people are also taking what is theirs. So people are directly fighting with, and this is something I think we don't talk about enough, but people are directly attacking the role of corporations on, you know, and exploiting us under capitalism. And so I think, and when people are massively mobilizing, people are directly confronting storefronts, and people are taking back the things that was produced by their labor. People are directly going after businesses that participate in either paying people low wages, not hiring them, or threatening local businesses that Black people could be starting and Black people could be running. Inside of those rebellions, we see that the president is calling for the National Guard, for the domestic military, and for the police to be extremely violent against protesters. And so there are videos that are being shared all across social media where protesters are just marching and then police are shooting in rubber bullets. We already have seen that some protesters have been murdered since the rebellions have started. Also, we see that there's continued violence outside of protesting by the police terrorism against the Black community. So today is an important day because it's Breonna Taylor's birthday. And so Breonna Taylor was one of the people who we are pointing attention to that was murdered, a young Black woman who was also an EMT, so a paramedic, who was at her home sleeping, and the police bust inside of her home and murdered her. And so across the country today, there's a massive day of action in the name of Breonna Taylor, honoring Breonna Taylor. There's there are rallies happening all over, celebrations happening all over, as well as more intense mobilization or organizing efforts happening all over. In addition to this, we see one of the things that's most exciting is we see a wave of young leaders. We see a generation of young leaders who were not already activated in the resistance, who are now activated and inside of the resistance. And so though there is a lot of challenge and a lot of suppression happening where the police are targeting our leaders, we also see that there's a wave of leaders who are showing up to help flank those who are being targeted, as well as broadening and expanding the movement, because our goal is to be ungovernable. Our goal is to get the system to a brink where it can no longer manage us through its terrorism and intense militarized police forces.
Thank you so much. Talib, can you also add something to this from your perspective? What's going on?
All right, perfect. So not to sound redundant to any of those that have just went before me, what's going on right now is what you see as mass rebellion, as well as just some being tired. To put it in its most simplistic terms, being tired. Tired of oppression, tired of being the victims of capitalism, tired of being the victims of police brutality, tired of being the victims of educational castration, economic dilapidation, housing, gentrification, any negativation, just being completely tired of it. And you see that these things did not just happen. These are things that have accumulated over time. You know, the COVID-19 pandemic was interesting to me, particularly in the United States, because when you saw that wave of unemployment, there's a saying that goes during any type of depressive years or years in which the economy is bad, Black folks didn't even realize that the entire country was under an economic recession or depression, because we've been living that. We've been living that. So these are things that are now, the media is catching on to it, like the frustrations about everything that's going on. But every day, every single day of our Black lives since we were kidnapped and brought to this country have been under pure hell. And I think we really have to be able to paint that picture so there can be a clear understanding of what's going on. You know, so through that, you'll see the aspects of gerrymandering. You see the aspects of the school to prison pipeline. You see the aspects of the militarization of the police, you know, all these different facets and things. And what's happening is there's a way to say we're tired. We're just completely tired of it. Now, the issue becomes, because there's a distinction between mobilization and organization, right? As an organizer, it's easy to mobilize people around a death. Like that, we're the most oppressed sector in the whole country. So it's like, it's easy to mobilize someone around a death and say, you know, you shouldn't have killed us. You shouldn't have had your knee on our neck for 9 minutes. First of all, we shouldn't have to tell you, you shouldn't have to do that. That should be innate within you to know that that's not humane. But notwithstanding that, you know, being tired, I lost my train of thought. Hold on.
It's just fine. We know we're tired. You know, I'll come back to you, Talib, you know, just on that thread of what's going on. I want to hear just a few things. Anything different from what you know, Talib and Adam said, Yoel and Dima, anything else that we should know about what is going on right now?
I think on many levels, Talib losing his track of thoughts is what's going on. Is by design what's been going on. We have been accepting so many distractions being thrown straight in our faces in every single aspect of our lives. So just as soon as we are beginning to hold the thread that connects all the dots, that connects us to reclaiming our truth, we lose track. We lose track of thought. We lose track of action. We lose track of one another and what one another is doing. But for me, a different perspective, and it's all about how we view things, because how we view things dictates how we approach them, right? If we are seeing a little cub, very peaceful, very quiet, far away, and it's like, oh, it's maybe a good idea for us to approach the cub. But if we see that cub's mother standing somewhere far away, we'll think twice, thrice, maybe more at approaching that cub in any way. So I want us to take a moment to just look at what's happening. Yes, we are tired, but what's happening is also an ultimate reclamation of truth. From the first day our ancestors were robbed of our lands to make their way here, That was the beginning of the distortion of truth. Their truth was shifted from being masters of their lands to slave to whatever land they are going to. And that distortion of truth has then filtered in and conditioned every aspect, every fiber of our being through the generations. Mm-hmm. What is happening now is that we are finally recognizing that truth. Enough of us have finally gone on our own, stretched ourselves sideways, made our own journeys back to the continent, back to our family, sought our family wherever we can, families we didn't even know existed, to get those missing pieces of our narratives, of our truth, so that we are able to reclaim it and say, here we are. And I speak this and I say this as a Nubian, but also as a Sudanese. A Sudanese, for those, Sudan, for those who don't know, the meaning of the word Sudan, Bilad al-Sudan, means the land of the black. And in a conversation, a panel discussion that we held, I was invited to on the 3rd of June, which is the anniversary of the massacre. It was held by the Sudan Diaspora Networks and some of its affiliates. One of our brothers and co-panelists was saying, it goes beyond what our name is right now. Historically, before Sudan, it being Kemet, it being Ethiopia, the land of people with burnt faces, the land of the black, the land of black people, it all goes down to that same piece of land, which I call home. So what's happening right now is a continuation for me of the revolution that started and sparked in December 2018, that the entire world was so adamant on silencing because it was the people and the youth of the land of the black rising to make room so that every single person of African descent has a place that they can, with dignity, call home.
Thank you. Thank you, Dima. Yoel, just your take on the situation right now, what is going on from your perspective?
Yeah, I think my comrades described most of what's going on. I think it is true that, you know, we are in a moment of rebellion. You know, I commend our comrades in the streets who are doing whatever is necessary to confront the enemy, you know, using whatever means necessary. I think the two points I wanted to flag, that one of the things that you're going to notice and we're noticing here is that these propaganda pictures and videos of cops kneeling and cops marching with our people, and in every instance, in every city where that has happened for like 10, 15 minutes, all the reports we've gotten from our comrades everywhere is that within 30, 40 minutes, orders have been given to violently disperse those people. And so it's just important to note that, you know, while media and, you know, the capitalist media is playing that up as a propaganda tool, to attempt to show that, you know, the instruments of oppression in this country are actually side by side with the people, that is actually not true. That in every instance where that has happened, people have been shot with rubber bullets, people have been maced, people have been arrested and dispersed violently. The second piece is, and I'm really glad Hakima mentioned our political prisoners who've been incarcerated for 30, 40, 50 years. One of the brothers she mentioned, Jalil Muntaqim, he's been in prison as a political prisoner for 49 free times, and he has recently positive for COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So there's been a lot of efforts to try to free Jalil, to try to urge the parole board to grant him his freedom. And that is one of the things that I've just been thinking about, and one of the things that are going on right now. So I just wanted to lift up those two pieces.
Thank you so much, so much. And Maurice, I would ask you to pick up some of the questions. I know on the thread there are questions that are coming in. I know we cannot respond to all of them, but we wanted at least to touch this one. What do we do now? Really, we want and I'll start with Gacheke, to speak to that. What would you, you know, what do you do? What are you doing? But also, what are you inviting, you know, people to do? Think of young people on the African continent, some of them who, you know, many, I would say, who believed that, you know, the U.S., you know, got it together. And of course, COVID-19, and then, you know, right now, the resistance, you know, coming from Black lives, now is showing that, well, this is not, this country is not what you thought, what they portrayed on the media that you saw, that you thought was. And the system that they're using, you know, is leaving so many other people out. We're talking also with people who have been organizing for years, you know, and that's why I'm going to give the floor to Gacheke, who have been themselves, you know, victim of police brutality, but have been organizing, counting and writing the name of the kids who got killed when nobody was looking and nobody was caring, and just, you know, writing them down if they couldn't do anything else until they start, you know, building cases and pushing for change to happen around that. So you have people who have been organizing. We just come out of 25th of May, which is African Liberation Day. Many people are here on this call that were, you know, helping us think through, you know, African liberation. What are the next steps? How do we do this? And where do we go from here? Many, many, many young people on this continent are engaged and want something different. They want dignity, they want justice, they want peace. How can they be, you know, of support in this moment? That's really the next question. Gacheke, I want to hear just a little bit from you, then I'll, you know, start again my way back while Maurice is pulling together some of the questions on the line. Thank you. Gacheke, unmute, please.
Thank you, Kuba. I hope you can hear you all. So inspiring panel, and it's very great. This is so great, Pan-African connected. And you know, our history is connected, as Kima said, M. Adam has shared, the struggle that is going on with the Black Lives Matter is historical. From the eras of Malcolm X, we remember Walter Rodney speaking about Black people, grounding with them in the United States. A lot of great, great inspirations. And many, many struggles that happen in Africa, starting even Kwame Nkrumah, the Pan-African movement, was inspired by brothers and sisters in the Caribbean and all those who are descent and of African in who are in Europe and in North America. They really inspired our struggles here in Africa. This is the struggle of independence. So we can't forget this connection. And it's very, very inspiring that the spirit of George Floyd and many, many people who have lost their life through the white supremacy, police violence, which is very historical since the era of slavery. This inspiration and struggle and the struggle that is going on now in the United States is inspiring young people in Africa. And you know, the 70% population of Africa is young people who have been killed every day through police violence, poverty, enslavement of working conditions. So it is the struggle that is going on in the United States is a spark to many African young people to see that the people who have been oppressed for many years through oppression, police brutality, they can come up in different cities and start demanding their right and start breathing life again to their struggle and to their diverse humanity. So here in Kenya, in the same way, we've been a former British colony which used violence to contain our people. We had the struggle of Mau Mau, and then after that, we came and had a government that is a neo-colonial state that is very strong, have a very strong character of violence. We have a police state that is very strong. And for many years, we have been struggling to try to to fight and demand for dignity and social justice. We started organizing because after 1990, you know, the crisis in all African country of World Bank and IMF, the neoliberal state that has exposed millions of people to poverty, hopelessness, and now you have major slums in a capital city like Nairobi. And when you have a capital city like Nairobi with a lot of with million young people with no job, they stay in the slums. So if a government has nothing to provide with them with employment, so what they do is to use the police state to do what you can call cleansing, as our sisters talk about Brazil, the people from the black people from Brazil, the genocide that is going on in favelas. There's no difference of what's happening also in Nairobi, in slums. That's the same thing, cleansing of young people, because the government cannot provide them with a job, with water, with healthcare. So the only option is to criminalize their livelihoods and criminalize their struggle. So this has been happening in the last 15 years, but we didn't give up hope. So we started documenting, and instead of just putting statistics, we started giving name, like what the United States has said. This is George Floyd. He had a family. He had a community living with. So we started documenting that. And slowly by slowly, the other social justice centers started cropping up and started putting, documenting also. And now the issue, the people could see a pattern and see that it's not an isolated case. It's not only one slum. It's not one area. Now, this is systematic, as Comrade Hakima said, that this struggle is systematic. So even today we had a meeting. There is a major pressure, and I really appreciate the struggle that has gone on in the United States, because even our government is fearing. Today they called us a meeting. And they are saying that they are willing to listen to us. It's very surprising that they are fearing. They are fearing. Today we had a meeting with the major cabinet secretary, security press. They were there, so they were telling us that, in fact, we are better off than the United States. We are meeting with you. And that can tell you the spark that has happened in the United States. I cannot tell you that meeting, the United States was named like 3 times, and George Floyd was named there. So it is very, very, very inspiring that the dictators, especially in Kenya, and they are fearing by seeing a massive young people coming out and demanding their dignity and their life again. So what I can say, and Africa Rising, is that you have to connect our struggle. The African Rising is a movement that can unify different struggles in Africa, whether in the Sudan, where there was a recent uprising, where there's Northern Africa, where there is a Bashar Mjondo in South Africa, where in Tanzania, where in Kenya, where we are organizing social justice centers, we can connect these struggles. And for sure, the same way the spark came from our brothers and sisters from Caribbean is also the same wave that is coming back. And I'm for sure we should unify these struggles through Pan-African struggles, and we get our liberation. It will be protracted, but we have to connect our struggles.
Thank you, Gacheke, that you know, the spark, what's going on in the US, pushed the Kenyan government to meet with you is something that is important to underline. I'm coming back just you know, to M. Adam. You know, you spoke on what's going on, but I want to hear, like, what's next? Where are we going? What do we need? What should people do? I know there are a few things that people are planning. You know, people are planning protests in these different countries. People are writing to the U.S. Embassies on the continent. They actually have been, you know, giving messages back to the U.S. and they're feeling uncomfortable because, you know, many people are really showing them that it's not okay what's going on. People are thinking, you know, raising money, you know, what else? What do we do? Putting, you know, of course, on our social medias and our Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. What do we need to do to be better at building this solidarity? I just want to hear from M. Adam.
Sure. So there are three, I'll just talk about a few of the demands that we're fighting for right now and how people can plug into that. So one, I want to point to one of our main demands right now is around community control, which is around Black people having the power to self-determine, which is around Black people effectively ending the colonial relationship that we have inside of the United States. So our assessment is that the Black community is functioning as a domestic colony, meaning that the police are occupying force. They come into our communities and their job is to maintain the extractive nature between us and the government. So they protect property. They force our bodies into unfair, exploitive capitalist labor relationships and a host of other things. And so connected to that, we have a demand around community control, where we are no longer, we're not fighting for access or influence. Instead, we are fighting for the ability to self-determine. We don't care about nice cops. We don't care about Black cops. We don't want that. We want the ability to ultimately determine what safety is for us and develop affirming Black, pro-Black infrastructure institutions that do that. So we're fighting for our ability to confront violence and harm inside of our community ourselves without the violence of the state coming in and worsening that. And so all around the country, there are different cities organizing for community control. And so connected to that demand, we're sharing information about it on our social media page. People should watch the video. I mean, people should share the information. We are engaging in platforms like this where we can do education sessions to have deeper dive into some of the issues that we're talking about. We're taking a deeper dive into Black feminisms. We are coming to the defense of Black women and girls, Black, queer, trans, and intersex people who are often erased when we talk about state violence. We connected to that, there's altar building happening all across the country, and we encourage people where they are, Black folks, wherever they are, build an altar to honor the lives of Black women and girls whose lives have been taken. And that's how we have to talk about it. Our lives are not just lost, they are stolen, right? They are looted. Those are the looters. The government is the looter, right? They have looted Black life for far too long. And we also have some petitions coming out, which we are posting on our social media page, where people can sign on to that and be with us in solidarity around asserting community control and seeking to end the colonial domination that's happening to Black people inside of the United States. The second demand, which we're really pushing for right now, is defund the police. No more resources going into police departments. No more resources for weaponry, no more resources for staffing. We think they all need to be out of here. We need to fire them. We need to all around do something different for our safety. And so we are fighting nationally. We will be launching a national campaign to defund the police. So that will be, that national campaign will be launched the next week or so.
Now we gathered here on the universe at this particular time, to listen.
Due to time, you can listen to the entire program on Africa World Now Project's SoundCloud. Just search Africa World Now Project.
But we're going to just hear the Black notes at this time, if you don't mind. Blackness, BLACKNUSS.
That's it for Africa World Now Project for this week. I would like to thank you for joining us today and look forward to spending time with you next week. We can be reached through all your regular social media platforms. Email africaworldnowproject@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at AFWRLDNWPRJ. I'm your host and producer, James Pope. The Africa World Now Project Collective consists of international media journalist, executive producer, and human rights activist, Moise Mutale, Africa World Now Project media correspondent, Funda Ngunda, senior research, content contributor, and production director, Dr. Tasneem Siddiqui, senior researcher and content contributor and production associate, Dr. Josh Myers, associate producer and content contributor, Dr. Keisha Khan Perry, technology advisor is Byron Gray of Grayworks Technology, and creative director is Judah Pope. Africa World Now Project is heard every Wednesday at 7 p.m. on WSNC, NPR affiliate and broadcasting service of Winston-Salem State University. Shows are archived weekly on SoundCloud. Search Africa World Now Project. Until next week, be safe, be peaceful, and above all, be intelligent.
B-L-A-C-K in USL.